Hi, my name is Paul Dunay, and welcome to another Buzz Marketing for Technology podcast. Welcome to another Buzz Marketing for Technology podcast, conducted in cooperation with Marketing Props. I'm your host, Paul Dunay, and today I'm speaking with Nicholas Carr, former Harvard Business Review executive editor, author of Does IT Matter, and a recent author of a book called The Big Switch. So welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Thanks, Paul.
So today we're going to explore Nick's new book, The Big Switch, which explores how the world is rewiring itself to the Internet in the same way that we did when electricity became centralized in America. So, Nick, can you spend a moment and just get the audience up to speed on the premise of your book?
Sure. What I argue is that we're in the early stages of a fundamental change in the nature of computing. What used to take place inside of our computers, inside of our PC or inside of the corporate server computers down the hall in the data center, is moving out of those boxes and onto the Internet. In other words, rather than running software and storing all our data on our own private hard drives, increasingly we're using the Internet as a kind of shared computer. Software applications are running in big central data centers like the ones run by Google. And more of the data we use, even our personal data, is stored out in those data centers. And it's a change from kind of a private supply model to a more of a utility model. And this is a kind of shift we've seen before. For instance, as you mentioned, and this is an analogy I develop in the book, 100 years ago, you know, everybody, if you wanted to run a machine or run a factory, you had to produce your own power with your own private generator. And as soon as we had the alternating current electric grid, we shifted, companies shifted, and people shifted to getting their power as a utility. And I think a similar thing is happening now with computers and computing.
Yeah, definitely agree. So in the book, you know, you cited that companies are spending well over $1 trillion on hardware and software, which I can believe.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but feel that, you know, don't we need these costs back into our system? And in other words, you know, going with the premise of your book and going with a more distributed utility kind of thing in order to gain competitive advantage now in this post-Sarbanes-Oxley era.
Yeah, I mean, most of that $1 trillion in annual IT spending is going into stuff, whether it's hardware or software, that every company today basically has to buy and operate. So in other words, it's a competitive necessity, but it's not giving anyone a competitive advantage. You know, your servers or data storage systems and even a lot of your software are basically the same stuff all your competitors are running as well. And so if there's a way, and I think there finally is, to begin to centralize the supply of some of that shared technology, we can drive down, I think fairly dramatically, the capital expenditures that companies have to make today in IT. And as a result, companies can shift that capital to innovations and other activities that are really more core, central to their real, you know, core business. So, you know, on the one hand, it simply promises to be a more efficient way to deploy the IT capabilities that all companies today rely on, but that provide very little in the way of competitive advantage.
Yeah, definitely going forward, that's not going to provide a competitive advantage, you know, for people owning the hardware, owning the software, especially with the updates and stuff that need to happen to that. You know, one of the most sensitive parts of the book, I think, for most people is the fact that you state, you know, IT departments are unlikely to survive, at least in their current format. So how do you think IT departments will look going forward?
Well, the first thing, you know, that I need to say is that in talking about the big changes in IT departments, at least in big companies, I think that's as I write in the book, we're talking a decade or two down the road. I think in the near term, IT departments are going to play a central role in helping companies make the transition from private computing to what's now often called cloud computing. But if you do look, you know, ahead a decade or two, and you think about a world in which a lot of the stuff that every company has to do in terms of IT itself and in a private matter today is done in a shared utility manner, then a lot of the traditional work of IT departments simply evaporates. We know, for instance, today that about 70% of IT labor costs go into routine maintenance kind of activities, to keeping the machinery running in your own data center. So I think at the very least, IT departments are going to have to change their role dramatically and probably shrink in size as we see a redeployment of people from inside companies to utility providers. And the big challenge for IT departments is going to be to figure out how to play a more central role in the business as their technical role begins to disappear.
Right, and that's something that we see at Bearing Point as well. We see, you know, 70, even 80% of a given IT budget is used to keep the lights on the existing applications that they already have,
right,
which only gives them 20% really for innovation. So, you know, flipping that paradigm is obviously the goal for most IT departments.
I think that's right, it's both an opportunity, but it's going to be a big challenge because anytime you take something that today accounts for 70 or 80% of what you do and get rid of it, in effect, that's a fairly traumatic change.
Yeah, very dramatic change, definitely. So another stunning example, you know, sort of away from the IT departments was something that you cited around how the British troops in Basra were attacked by insurgents who used Google Earth to show
right.
the position of their soldiers in enough detail to show even the longitude and latitude. So on a more local level, what do you suggest the average person should do to protect their data in this, you know, distributed environment?
It's a good question, and it's, you know, the question of personal privacy gets a lot of attention today. But I think what we've seen is that people are fairly happy to trade their privacy in order to get, you know, greater convenience or free stuff or more customized experiences online. So, you know, I think we're seeing a sort of Faustian bargain where people trade away their privacy for greater convenience. Yet I think it's often, you know, often reflects perhaps a degree of ignorance among people about how closely their online behavior and online activities are tracked even today. So I think it's, you know, it's a tough issue because I see a lot of, you know, dangers in essentially exposing our identities and our behavior online. On the other hand, I recognize the fact that it does provide, you know, greater convenience and a more customized experience while on the net. So, you know, to be honest, I don't know how how that tension is going to end up resolving itself.
Yeah, it is sort of a yin and yang. I mean, from a privacy perspective, it could be very challenging. And you do an excellent example citing, you know, how someone backed into, you know, finding the identity of a person using just, you know, generic AOL data, which was really amazing. On the opposite side of the coin, you know, as a marketer, I think, wow, there could be tremendous benefit from all this data. So do you think, like, behavioral targeting could become commonplace in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years?
I do. I mean, I think we're seeing a number of trends converge, not only, you know, and one of the most important is the ability to more tightly track and understand people's behavior, particularly their behavior as consumers online. And one thing that's, you know, that's pushing that forward is the model of cloud computing, which is built on the ability to share information across databases fairly simply and tap into, you know, the information that was once, fragmented across the net. And what that allows is it allows marketers to companies and marketers to track more tightly and draw on many different databases to get an ever more precise picture of the people's motivations and behavior online. So I think it could be, on the one hand, a treasure trove of data for marketers. On the other hand, it does at the same time raise ethical issues, I think, for marketers. At what point do we cross the line from delivering, custom experiences and custom messages to people to actually manipulating what people do online without them necessarily knowing that they're being manipulated? And I think, within the next 5 or 10 years, that's we're gonna reach a time when that kind of monitoring and manipulation actually starts to become possible.
Right, or even feel invasive, right, where, maybe a marketer oversteps the line and, that might get that might catch fire on the blogosphere. I mean, you have a lot of different channels here that could potentially challenge.
Right, and we saw that, when Facebook rolled out its Beacon advertising program, where it was drawing – not only on what people were doing on its site, but whenever they went off site to buy something or look at something. And that caused quite a big reaction, but it also showed what's already possible and what companies are already doing routinely. Facebook's big mistake was to make a big publicity push about it.
Mm-hmm. But you also bring up the idea of it being sort of a self-policing spot whereby, people will say, hey, that's a little too far. You got to roll it back. And they did.
Right. And that assumes that what we don't know is what we've seen in the past with marketing in general, and I think with internet marketing in particular, is that people will rebel at first, but then they actually start to get used to a more invasive marketing approach because it there are benefits in terms of customization and personalization. So, we don't know yet if we'll reach a kind of equilibrium in terms of privacy or whether we'll see a continued erosion of what we used to think of as the more private sphere.
Agreed. So from a different angle, from a marketing perspective, I was a little concerned when you cited, generalized problem solving and complex communications are already being carried out for free on the web, and it seemed to get a little close to the marketing space, with user-generated content. We have seen individual videos, the Doritos ad that was run by the Super Bowl. Do you think this is a problem or an opportunity for marketers? Should we be concerned that our jobs are going to get outsourced? What's your feeling there?
I think it's, I think it's probably a little bit of both. Marketers can capitalize on the freely kind of contributed messages and marketing that users are donating on the web. On the other hand, any kind of informational activity, a job that requires the collection and analysis of information becomes a target for automation as computer costs continue to fall, which is also one of the inevitable consequences of cloud computing. So, I think we'll continue to see, whether it's in marketing or other areas, that a lot of the more routine information processing jobs that were once done by people are going to shift to being done by computers and machines.
Right, or even being done for free by people who are willing to volunteer their time in other countries or what have you to do that for you.
Right. And that now, we've also seen that in some cases the hype about user-generated content can get ahead of the reality. So, for instance, having users create advertisements, video advertisements or whatever, some studies show that actually it turns out to be more expensive for companies to run those types of promotions and gather and edit user-generated ads than just going out to an ad agency. So it's not quite as clear cut as it sometimes seems.
Okay, good advice, good advice. A couple of questions came in over Twitter, and I want to pose them to you as well. One day, selecting a utility computing provider might become as fun as selecting a broadband, internet, or mobile phone provider. What new products or services will be available to B2B and B2C type consumers in your mind?
Well, I think this is, I think we don't, we, it's very hard to foresee all the things that are going to emerge because, you know, to go back to my electricity analogy, it was only after we saw the build out of the electric grid and power became very cheap in historical terms and very abundant that we suddenly had an explosion of innovation, you know, in terms of all sorts of consumer appliances that moved into the home. In a similar way, I think that once we have the build out of what is in essence a computing grid, in computing in data storage and applications become very cheap and very abundant, I think we're going to see a similar explosion of innovation on top of that. So for marketers, for companies in general, one of the big questions, and this goes far beyond the IT department, is, you know, how are products and services going to change when they all essentially have access to virtually unlimited computing capacity? And the fact is, you know, I don't know what the answer to that question is, and I don't think anybody really knows, but I do know that it's going to be, you know, the basis for a lot of very interesting innovation in the years ahead.
That's interesting. Who do you think will help B2B consumers select utility computing providers and, you know, or setting up and enforcing SLAs and ensuring data security? What do you think the future would be down that particular trail?
Well, I think there's two answers to that question. On the one hand, you know, I think we're already seeing, you know, big traditional IT suppliers, whether it's, you know, the IBMs and HPs, of the world, or on the consulting side, the various firms that help companies, you know, figure out their IT strategies, are all shifting their focus to incorporate cloud computing and software as a service into their portfolio. So certainly, you know, companies, particularly large companies, will continue to look to traditional suppliers to help them make choices in this area. On the other hand, you know, I think we can see as one of the attractions of cloud computing, particularly if we can begin to see a lot of standards emerge and a lot of interoperability emerge, is that a lot of the integration challenges, integrating applications, integrating data, integrating across different suppliers, can be alleviated by the cloud computing model, which is built on the notion of shared applications and shared data rather than isolated applications and isolated data as we've seen in the past. So, you know, one of the hopes would be that IT would become considerably easier, maybe I should put easier in quotes, for companies as we move more and more into the utility model.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate your predictions. So thank you very much for joining me today, Nick. I really appreciate your time. For our listeners, it's your turn. Please let us know how you are feeling about the big switch, or if you have any questions for Nick. We'll be glad to keep this conversation going with you online, and we'll be back again next week with another podcast. And thank you very much for listening. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to having you back next week on another Buzz Marketing for Technology podcast.